Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for second helping. This is almost like a third helping on a Wednesday night in early June. This time I mean it. Travis Ryer alongside my great friend and co-host Brent Beard. We have hooked up, Brent. You know, you leave me to my own devices where some of this technology is concerned. You never know what you're going to get, but we're hooked up. It's late night on a Wednesday on June the 4th. We are live, so if you'd like to jump in the comments or the show chat, feel free to do that, Brent. We've got SEC spring meetings on our way. We talked a lot about that last week. We're just kind of in a wait and see, kind of a holding pattern, it seems like, with a lot of things that are going to be very important. To college football and college athletics. It just feels like we've been on this treadmill of, you know, the scenery hasn't changed a lot. So until we actually get some substance, more stuff to that, I thought we'd get a little more topical tonight because you know what, Brent? With SEC spring meetings behind us, that means you know what is on the not too distant horizon.
Well, the credential requests actually were mailed by the SEC this week for the media day. So that's around the corner.
There you go.
You know, with that too. And look, the other reality is these players, they are at school. They've moved in. They are working out. Now, I tell you what, Trav, I do hope if we go to this OTA thing, I think one of the real benefits of that would be is they would be with the coaches more, would they not?
They would, although some of these programs that have the resources, they had almost implemented the secondary coaching staffs where, you know, the strength and conditioning staffs had become filled out to the point where you almost had coaching staffs beyond the regular season coaching staff, but I'm with you. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the great facade of college football these days. You know, we can't have the coaches working with the players directly in the office. Yes, we can.
Yeah, hey, why not?
The veil of amateurism has really been ripped away. This is pro football.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm with you. Hopefully that is something that could change, but you're right, man. Where the college football calendar is concerned, not that it really ever ends anymore, because even before the portal and some of this stuff that's come into play, May was still pretty quiet. You know, when the recruiting calendar changed with the portal and visits moving to June, then you essentially just went with no offseason at all. But prior to that, May would be kind of quiet, you know, and even July. To an extent, those are pretty much gone out the window. But really, when I've thought about the college football calendar year, even in the last 10 or 15 years, it's been June 1st.
Sure.
Because even if there was that sort of interim break in May, as you just pointed out, everybody gets back together after Memorial Day. And that's really when it starts, because you truly have at least what you think will be your football team for the upcoming season altogether, because you might've had early enrollees in January, but you didn't have your summer enrollees there yet, or the portal arrivals that come, you know, after the late window. So yeah, it really is sort of that effect on college football teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're still getting information on TV times and things of that nature, which is kind of fun to be able to see that. Athlon is in, and we got Lenny's coming in. Phil Steele will be here in July the 4th. That is going on also. So but you know, if we could, and hopefully again, I know the House versus Nation thing has been delayed until the end of the month. So that, and like you said, there's really nothing else to say about that at this point either. But we are at just a time where the clock's ticking, and I think people are getting, you know, excited. And I know there's a lot of frustration when people, they don't like NIL. They don't like some of the rules, and they don't like the conference is going against each other and things like that. But hopefully, as we've talked several times this week, you know, the game on the field saves us, Trav.
Oh, gosh.
It has so far, and hopefully it will continue to do that.
Yeah, hopefully. Hey, Brian Kane checking in here in the show chat. We appreciate each and every one of you that jump on board. Brian says, don't get to join y'all as often as I want. When I can, it's the top of my list for insights and analysis, whatever the phase of the college football calendar. Thank you. No, thank you, Brian. Absolutely. We appreciate those kind words as we get going on a Wednesday night. And yeah, we are going to have SEC Media Days, not in Hoover, which I've said before, SEC Media Days anywhere other than Hoover is kind of like if you played the SEC football championship game and say like College Park, Maryland or something, or like when we've had college football playoff games in Santa Clara, you know, or places like that, it just doesn't, it doesn't feel right. Now, look, Clemson fans thought Santa Clara was great. I was there. I saw what Clemson did to Alabama that night. So I feel you if you're a Clemson fan, but you get the gist. And one of the things though, with the magazines out, kind of ramps up sort of the predictions, and we've seen things like the Football Power Index from ESPN here in the last week, where the SEC, when you talk about spots 1 through 19 of that ranking, boy, it is heavy with the Southeastern Conference, especially 10 through 19. But you've got Texas, you've got Georgia, you've got Alabama in the top four of that. But I wanted to ask you, Brent, about some of the your thoughts on what we're going to see at SEC Media Days when it comes time to projecting, predicting preseason favorites. And we understand sometimes, or a lot of times, the media hadn't gotten it right where the outright champion is concerned. I guess they got it right last year, though, with Georgia. I believe Georgia was the preseason favorite. I want to say Georgia, maybe I don't know. But what do you think about this go around? Is it just going to be as simple as in some order, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, or do you think there could be some discrepancies there?
Oh, I think there's always a chance for some discrepancies. I think Texas will probably be number one. And obviously with Arch Manning coming back, I get that. Georgia will be very, very close to them. I think the, and I think Bama will be in the top four. Also, I think what's fascinating to a degree is they've got the, you know, they're, I think there'll be some that's going to have Florida on the cusp there at 5, 6, or 7 to where they could move up, frankly, with that. But I don't see A&M, OU, Tennessee ranked that high, frankly. And look, everything I've seen has got Auburn like 10 or below. And listen, it doesn't take reading between the lines on that one. If they end up like 11 or 12 in the league, Trav, this time next year, we'll be talking about the new Auburn coach in his first year.
Wow. Could be. Could be for sure. And that's why I think that Baylor game, as we've talked about, even right out the gate on that Friday night out in Waco, very, very important towards the tone, the morale, maybe, of that program. Because you're going to get a couple of gimmies or what appear to be gimmies for Auburn after that. But if you lose to Baylor, even if you win the next two and you're sitting there at 2-1, that fan base is going to be feeling pretty raw and salty, I would think, at that point. Now, we talk about Texas, very interesting team, because when I think about a team with maybe the two or at least two of the toughest road games in the conference for this upcoming season, I look at Texas because they go to Florida. And then what about mid-November, a trip to Athens, Georgia? You know, it's not early. It's late.
It is.
Texas goes out there. So I do think otherwise, though, within the league, it works out pretty well for Texas. But if Florida takes that step so many people are expecting the Gators to take, that's not going to be an easy trip.
No.
And then certainly Georgia, from a personnel perspective and playing on its home field, and the success we saw Georgia have against Texas a year ago.
Yes, yes. And listen, that's going to be, and Pop may be one of them, but that Texas game in Gainesville is going to be one of the biggest games they have had there in quite a while.
Long time.
As far as just pure hype. But look, my concern for Texas would be November, Vandy, Georgia, Arkansas, and A&M. Now, one thing that you and I have talked about for decades is the cumulative effect of the attrition that you go through in this conference. Mm-hmm. And they should be favored to except for Georgia, to win all those games. But, Trav, again, they lose, what, a starter or two after every game? Yeah. By the time you get to November, that can be pretty dicey.
It can be. Something else Texas is going to have this year that it didn't have a year ago is a very formidable opener. When you talk about that road trip to Columbus, to take on Ohio State. Now, again, that doesn't impact things much from a conference perspective. But I think with the Arch Manning hype and the expectations for him to be a top two or three player at his position in all of the sport, and then how things kind of set up for the Longhorns, even beyond those road trips to Gainesville and Athens, I agree. I think it'll probably be Texas at the top. I like Georgia from the perspective of it does get Alabama and Texas in Athens.
Oh, yeah. You know,
and now we can talk about previous trips by Alabama to the state of Georgia to take on the Bulldogs and how those have gone in favor of the Alabama Crimson Tide. But those type of things seem to stack up well for Georgia. But I think in terms of just overall difficulty where the SEC slate is concerned, it helps to have those games at home, but still won't be easy for Georgia.
No, and they've got a lot of work to do. I mean, Gunnar Stockton's on the front of some magazines, but is Gunnar going to be the long-term quarterback for them? I think he will if he stays healthy. Now, we only got a small sample size, but he got in late in the season and was able to get a part of some really big games. But you and I've talked about this now for weeks, and I'm not sure I see enough on this yet. With people talking at Trev, until they get back to what they have been on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're going to be 8-4 or anything like that, but until both those lines get fixed, that there will remain many questions for them.
There will. And I think it helps Georgia that if you're going with a first-year starter at quarterback to Knoxville early in the season like Georgia is this year, it doesn't hurt that Tennessee will be going with a first-year starter at quarterback with
Nico
moving on to UCLA. Otherwise, I think from a conference perspective, it stacks up pretty nice for Georgia. You know what else you get at home? You get Ole Miss in Athens. I mean, You think about viable candidates for Southeastern Conference championship candidates, and boy, you get Alabama, Texas at home, and even Ole Miss you're going to get in Athens as well. Is Florida – well, first, let's talk about Alabama because they're in that group of three.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think roster-wise, Alabama might be the most attractive of those three teams to me. When I just look at the teams on paper, and in terms of which of these teams has gotten the best news in terms of returning players or departures where the transfer portal is concerned, combine that with another stellar recruiting class for Alabama. Alabama feels more like that team. Now, you know, look, Alabama's got to go to Athens. As we talked about, and you know, South Carolina is one of those road trips that probably won't be very easy for the Crimson Tide. Auburn has never been easy. And we can talk about Auburn as perhaps teetering on the brink of another coaching change, but when Thanksgiving weekend rolls around, that will still be, regardless, a scary proposition for Kalen DeBoer going down to the Plains for the first time. But again, when I look at Alabama structurally, as a roster, as a football team, in terms of what it's been able to sustain and what it's added, yeah, it's a team that very definitely should be in the mix for an SEC championship.
Oh, yeah, maybe as many as nine coming back on defense, in a defense that certainly really improved. They got some guys healthy, which is a big help with that. Their wide receivers, I've seen them in the top five of the best wide receivers, certainly in the nation. Simpson's got a small sample size, too. That Bama-Georgia game, you've got two quarterbacks that haven't played much, frankly, so that'll be an interesting storyline with that. But will that line be better, Trav? And they've got good backs, but will they be able to run the ball?
Yeah, that's that. Or will they commit to running the ball? I still don't think Alabama's going to be a team that's under Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb that's going to say, look, we're going to line up and run it 40 times a week. Yeah. That's just not who they are. That's not the offense that's in Tuscaloosa now. What I do think is this. I think they'll be able to complement the run game with the quick passing game better than they did a year ago.
Yes.
Again, you're not going to have Derrick Henry with 395 carries in 2015. That's not going to happen at Alabama. But you could have Jam Miller with a couple hundred carries, and then with Ty Simpson in there, perhaps an upgrade where the quick game is concerned, getting the ball out quickly to the perimeter. Get it to Ryan Williams and give him a chance after the catch in space. And he's not the only guy that they're going to have that you're going to want to try to do that with. So I think that's something to keep an eye on when you think about something other than just the traditional passing game with Ty Simpson and those talented receivers he's going to have. The offensive line's getting a lot of preseason love. My answer to that has been great. Let's see it. You know, I think Alabama in year two under Kalen DeBoer is team prove it. You know what I mean? Like you're hearing all these things about Alabama, and you know, most of it's very positive, and I get that. But I think there's a large faction of that fan base that's like, yeah, that's great. Now let's see it. You know, let's actually put it on tape, Brent.
Well, the prove it part to me, Travis, is, and this happened to them obviously in the losses they had last year. It could easily be argued, and look, I know the inconsistency at quarterback with Jalen Milroe, and I get all that, but the disturbing thing that they showed a couple of times last year, they just were not at all ready to play.
Against six-win teams. Yeah. Alabama's season wasn't lost to Tennessee or those kind of teams. Alabama's season went down the drain against six-win Vanderbilt, against six-win Oklahoma. You know, those are the games and the teams, not the Tennessees on the schedules.
No,
but the teams that Alabama fans have grown so accustomed to not only beating but beating by 40 plus.
Yeah. Right. Oh so. Yeah. Well, and one of the more interesting things for them. Could they really? I mean, they've got the talent with these wide receivers. What, Trav? Could they really make a statement in the kicking game this year in that return game? Obviously, field goal kicker will be interesting. Yeah. But I'm just wondering with this kind of talent on kickoff and punt returns, could. And I'm not talking about scoring on every time that they get the opportunity, but I mean, can you get the ball to the 40-yard line on
depends on what you want to do with Ryan Williams, I think, where a lot of that is concerned. Do you want to put him back there on punts?
Yeah, really. You
know, some coaches are adverse to that. Some are like, hey, it counts as a touch. It's no different than if we throw it to him out in the flat and try to let him do his thing in space. Kind of a punt return's the same thing. Kickoff returns. Can a guy like Jalen Mbakwe in his second year maybe at least impact that? Because really, after moving to wide receiver, in the spring, we didn't really hear all that much about Jalen Mbakwe as a receiver after going over there, maybe as a return specialist. I think what you just said maybe is where the concerns for Alabama from a personnel perspective are not being talked about enough. Punter, place kicker,
right.
Even the long snapper, Nealon Hibbett, has moved on to the NFL. So it's a good situation to be in if you're the Alabama Crimson Tide, and it's certainly not going to do anything to sort of quell expectations in year two under Kalen DeBoer. So when we think about that next tier, like Tennessee, LSU, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, and then the Florida Gators. Very, very interesting. But, man, when I still go through Florida's schedule, as tough as it was last year.
Oh, yeah.
And you go to LSU in week three, okay? Mm-hmm. You kind of ease into things. You should be fine week one, week two.
Yeah.
But then you go to LSU in week three. Then you go to Miami in week four. You get a bye week.
Yeah.
Texas in Gainesville. Then the week after Texas, you go to Texas A&M. So you talk about a four-game stretch.
Oh, yeah.
Before you really get to mid-October, you go LSU on the road, Miami on the road, Texas at home, A&M on the road. Three out of four on the road, and you do have a bye week. But, boy, you talk about a defining stretch before you hit, like I said, mid-October. That's it for the Florida Gators.
And then, if you survive that, you've got – the challenges in November with the Georgia game being here for the last time, and that we'll see that game in a couple of years.
So you got Georgia, Atlanta. Yeah.
That's right. You got, Trav, you got Georgia and Kentucky, and it could be November the 8th. I mean, you know, it could be 45 degrees in Kentucky during that time. Then you go to Ole Miss and Tennessee.
Yeah, it's rugged, man, for Billy Napier. I know. What I like about Florida is it's not just DJ Lagway. Like, that's Florida, right. For the first time, I feel like, in a number of years, is legitimately built to withstand a lot of that. And when I say that, I'm talking about offensive line, defensive line. Got some war daddies on that defensive line, and offensively expected to be one of the better groups, along with Alabama, in all of college football when you're thinking about that offensive line. What about the LSU Tigers and all of this, Brent? And we talk about sort of stretches of a season that are going to tell us a lot about a football team. And I think it's set up pretty well for LSU. Now, you know, obviously you go to Clemson to get things started on a Saturday night. Labor Day weekend, and then you get Florida at home on September the 13th. You go to Ole Miss on September the 27th, but you get a bye week before you host South Carolina, which could be a sneaky big game. And then between Texas A&M and Alabama in late October, early November, you get another bye week. So it doesn't lay out all that poorly for Brian Kelly's team to be something more than just sixth or fifth in the league this time around.
Yeah, I agreed. I mean, that there are just no excuses for them. That they've got the talent. Aaron Anderson, who's transferred from Alabama, to me, Barry and Brown could be their biggest weapon. In returning kicks. Also, Nick Anderson coming out from Oklahoma. I mean, they've got as good receivers as anybody does. I mean, I think we both really like Garrett Nussmeier and what he can do. Caden Durham is a really capable back. Now, obviously, when you lose your two best offensive linemen to the NFL, you don't get over that real quick. But this could be the year, particularly on defense, if Harold Perkins, if they ever figure that out. That's one of the great mysteries to me there is why he's not playing better and why they haven't really figured out where to line him up yet.
Very interesting. You know, another team that you are intrigued by are the Ole Miss Rebels.
Oh, yeah.
Because that had the feeling, especially down the stretch of last season, of a culmination of what Lane Kiffin had been pointing towards, especially with Jackson Dart at the quarterback position and all the work they had done in the portal. That looked like a college football playoff team, especially after the win over Georgia.
Absolutely.
You know, later in the season, to win convincingly on the second Saturday in November over the Georgia Bulldogs. But then even after a bye week to turn around and have that disappointing loss at Florida, you know, on November the 23rd, I still wonder how Ole Miss will respond to all that. In some ways, I think it's maybe not the worst thing that they are transitioning at quarterback from a longtime starter to a promising young talent. Maybe some freshness isn't the worst thing for the Ole Miss Rebels.
Yeah, I still like this defense, what Lane has done with these guys. They don't return a lot of guys, but, I mean, Centurion Perkins is tremendous. Donnery is, but both those linebackers. Prince Will Yu, I think, is going to be impressive for them. As a Havian Harris, too. So, I mean, they're going to be in very good shape, frankly, a lot of ways. And that, and for their travel, their schedule, Georgia State at Kentucky, Arkansas, Tulane, and they really do, and I'm not being disparaging of these other teams, but they really don't play anybody until they get LSU the last Saturday in September.
I don't know if a lot of people understand that Ole Miss is hosting Washington State on October the 11th.
Really?
That's crazy. You know, I understand Washington State's in a different place than it was even a couple of years ago with the Pac-12, but you know, that's an interesting spot for a game like that. And look, you don't have to worry about John Mateer, at least not in that one. Now you'll have to worry about him 2 weeks later.
Yeah,
when
that's
you
right.
go to Norman, you miss Mateer in Oxford on October the 11th, but then you'll see him, you would think, if everything goes according to plan, the Washington State transfer at quarterback for OU October the 25th. So, Brent, Tennessee, I guess, in that mix still, or are they? How big a hit is that with Nico moving on to their chances, in your opinion? And South Carolina, I can't quite get my arms around yet.
I don't know
if I'm really ready to go in. It's not because I think Lenore Sellers is going to have a drop-off. That South Carolina just feels like one of those teams that every few years they're going to get on a roll, but then if they finish a season strong, because we saw this a couple of years ago, and then they had a disappointing 2023 maybe. Remember 2022? Yes. They did a lot of the things they did to finish 2024, and then 2023 wasn't the year. So will 2025 kind of be that type of situation from a couple of years ago for South Carolina, or will they be able to sustain it for a second season in a row under Beamer?
I still think they really need to develop, and I think they're better, but they really need to develop that vertical passing game. Nick Harbor's a guy who could really help them. You know, Luke Doty is still there. He's a wide receiver. Luke's played about every position.
He came in with, I think, Sterling Sharp.
Yeah, back probably.
83 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and Old Dominion at Kentucky. I'm sorry, Virginia Tech, South Carolina State, Vandy at Missouri, Kentucky. And they've got, I mean, you could argue that they may not be challenged until they go to LSU in the middle of October.
Yeah.
For South Carolina.
It sets up nicely from a schedule perspective. Tennessee is going to be fascinating.
They are. They really are.
The tumultuous offseason where it relates to the most important position on the field. And then to open against a really solid and emerging Syracuse program, in Syracuse. Been a proud program in the past. So you get Syracuse on August the 30th, East Tennessee State the following Saturday, and then you get the Georgia Bulldogs in Knoxville on September the 13th. I think after that three-game stretch, I think we're going to have a pretty good idea about Tennessee in 2025.
You know, this is crazy. But I'm not sure Aguilar may not be better for them, frankly, than Nico was. Hoping that Nico would get it together, in his career. But Aguilar was at App State, had two pretty good years. I get that he was at App State, but when you've got, like 3,000 or so yards, you're doing something right. Obviously, they've got to get things better at running back and on the defensive line. I'll talk about this until the season starts, until they're able to find success in the running game and that front seven on defense, they can replace some of those guys like Pierce who went to the NFL.
Guys, yeah.
I think a lot of things we've seen so far, Trey, I think Tennessee's will take a step backwards.
Yeah. Pretty much a quarterback-driven football team when you're thinking about Josh Heupel and that offense. Not even so much in terms of statistical production, but how that thing has to be managed with the tempo and the way they like to play. Mm-hmm. You've got to have the right guy behind center, no doubt about that. So, Brent, as we get out of here, I notice here in your notes, we've got the 2026 College Football Hall of Fame ballot that is out. Really fun to kind of go through the names because some we haven't really thought about all that much in a number of years. Like Alex Brown, who was an absolute terror as an edge defender for the Florida Gators going back. Man. 25, almost 30 years ago now.
Yeah.
And then also because with Oklahoma and Texas coming into the league, when you incorporate SEC guys on these lists, you see a Rocky Kalmus, the former Oklahoma linebacker, was a really, really good player on those Bob Stoops teams all those years ago. Randall Cobb, the outstanding utility knife type player for the Kentucky Wildcats, probably best known as a Green Bay Packer with I think Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, he spanned Randall Cobb did up there in Green Bay. Brad Culpepper, the Florida defensive lineman who played in the National Football League, I transitioned into a tremendous career as an agent. Brad Culpepper did. Alan Fanica, the outstanding offensive lineman from LSU. Boy, the list just goes on and on. Some of the names, again, you're synonymous with college football in the last quarter century. Mark Ingram, Cam Newton. So, I mean, the Heisman Trophy winners are there, but then some really, really good players that maybe we hadn't thought about all that much.
Look, and you've got a guy like Percy Harvin.
Oh, gosh.
Who would just in a trap, would just in a category by himself.
Electrifying.
He
would get those migraine headaches. Remember that?
Oh yes.
And they were debilitating, you know, I mean,
absolutely
some important games, I think, with that during his Florida career.
When he was healthy though. And look, he was a terror in practice. I understand in many ways.
Hell when he was well, as they say.
He was, wouldn't he? And listen, help me on this. I love Randall Cobb. People really need to go back and see how good Cobb was. Trav, wasn't Cobb the quarterback when Kentucky upset one of the better LSU teams?
I think he played some quarterback, at Kentucky. He did everything. When I said
he really did.
Swiss Army knife, that was Randall Cobb. He could do it all, anything. Oh, any phase of the game, he could do it. And then you got guys on here, too, like D'Amico Ryans, a former Alabama linebacker. I don't think people realize how great a college player he was.
True.
And not only that, just personified student athlete to a T. And now the head coach, of course, of the Houston Texans is D'Amico Ryans. So it's sort of fun to go down memory lane, as I said, because some of these guys we haven't talked about in years, but great, great football players. Garrison Hurst.
Yes.
Heck of a running back for the for the Georgia Bulldogs so many years ago. Josh Heupel's on here as a player, former Oklahoma quarterback, national champion. So of course Cam Newton, just an all-timer, top three or four all-time college football player in the history of the sport. So I enjoy that. It's a little nostalgia there, Brent.
Yeah, and it's fascinating to look at the coaches here. And the number one, I am a big Mike Leach fan, and what they did. Now he won't go in with this class.
Right.
He'll be the 2027 class, but I'm delighted to see that. But Trev, two names in SEC football with Dennis Franchione and Tommy Tuberville.
Those are interesting.
That are very interesting.
Tommy did have that one season with Auburn where there was the controversy about the national team. What is it, 03?
Yeah. Southern Cal was involved with all that too.
Yeah. He had Ronnie Brown and Cadillac.
Yes.
I want to say.
Yeah. They could have ran a wishbone that year, Trent.
Yeah. And I don't get Fran being on here, but hey, you know, Fran, when he went to A&M, didn't he give up like 77 to Oklahoma in a game? I mean, that should be automatic DQ. You give up 70, you're DQ.
Yeah, Trav, on any given night on Twitter, someone will flash that scoreboard up there from time to time. I will never forget an Alabama beat writer who said Dennis Franchione, when he was at Alabama, he said from Sunday through Friday night was one of the better coaches in the country. And then you got on Saturday, and that's where the questioning was.
I attended a couple of Bama games when Fran was the head coach that were just both ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
I think it was 2001, and Lou Holtz was at South Carolina, and Alabama went to Columbia.
Yeah, yes.
And with Tyler Watts, just ran sort of that option offense that ran, and it was beautiful to watch when it was right. It was, and just blew a big lead at South Carolina and lost one of those early kickoffs at Williams-Brice Stadium. I remember that one, but then a year later I went to Baton Rouge and I watched Alabama just tattoo Nick Saban.
Yeah.
And LSU with Dennis Franchione. So it didn't seem like there was much middle ground with Fran. It was either great, 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 or it was not so great. I mean, there were, like I said, there were those kind of performances. I saw Alabama in probably 02 just slack, I want to say, Ole Miss in Tuscaloosa. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then lay an egg at home in an Iron Bowl. Yeah. Auburn, a year after beating Auburn on the road. It was all over the place with Frank. You just didn't
know. That's right. I thought one of his biggest wins, I think, is the one you're talking about. They went to Auburn, and Auburn thought that
31-7.
That Tyler Watts was going to be the quarterback, and they were going to run the ball the whole game. And instead threw the ball all over the field, and it was like what 31-7 or something like
one
that.
One of the best games of Fran's short time at Alabama I saw that I attended. The Alabama-Georgia game doesn't get talked about in 2002. That was a heck of a game in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
Came down to a field goal late, and Georgia was able to get the W.
Yes.
But, I mean, Fran, when he was engaged
and
locked in and committed and mm-hmm. – really into it, good coach, but just no middle ground.
No, and then they lost. You remember this, that when he was flirting with A&M, I don't think they did hardly anything the week of the Auburn game.
Yeah, that was that Iron Bowl in
02. Where they could not do anything. And Trav, you've got maybe the future governor of the state of Alabama, Tommy Tuberville, at Ole Miss, Alabama fans still wake up sweating sometimes with Tommy holding up six fingers, don't they?
Tommy, he caught Alabama at a good time during
he
that.
He did, stretch, didn't he?
You know,
he did. Caught
Mike Shula, you know, I think he caught some tail end of Dubose.
Mm-hmm. He did. Yes.
Speaking of tail end, he never saw Mike Price. he saw Fran.
Yeah.
And then, he got Nick that one, that in 07, mm-hmm. and then Nick hammered him in 08, and that was it.
Oh, yeah.
It was all off the politics for Tommy. So,
it was.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun kind of going down memory lane. Brent, anything else before we get out of here late night on a Wednesday?
Yeah. I appreciate folks listening. There'll be a lot more going on over the next few weeks. Hopefully, we're going to get some decisions. Do we go to 8, stay at 8, or do we go to 9? Do we go to 16? I think a lot of Trev, I think this is one of those seasons people will be so happy just to get the games, particularly if there are decisions made
last week.
These big factors that they won't know what to do.
Yeah, that was me last week. That's me every week. But
yeah,
after all the talk in Sandestin, I was like, oh, geez, can we just get some games eventually, hopefully.
Yeah.
It'll make you appreciate it even more. That's why you got to look at it.
That's right.
You already love college football. You'll appreciate it even more after
this
offseason. Brent, as always, a lot of fun. Look forward to doing it again real soon.
Good. Can't wait, bud. Take care. Have a great week.
Yeah, and thanks to each and every one of you tuned in live. And, of course, the show will archive right there on Ryer on YouTube. If you haven't subscribed to Ryer on YouTube as of yet, hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell. That way you're alerted to all of our content as it drops here on the channel. And if you would hit us with a like, we would appreciate that. A thumbs up would be great as well. For Brent Beard, Travis Ryer, thanking you. And until next time, so long, everybody.